They've locked the doors. So, hello everyone. My name is Guy. This is Evgeny. We're both program managers in the SQL Server Cloud Infrastructure team. Can you hear me okay? Great. So the topic of today, and actually thanks a lot for spending the last hour and a bit of the conference with us. I appreciate that. today's topic, SQL Server running in a Windows Azure virtual machine. And let me just ask out of interest, has anyone tried Windows Azure virtual machines yet? Okay, a few early adopters at the back. I just tried the sign-up process today, and you get 750 hours free, and it was very easy, actually, very straightforward. So hopefully by the end of this session, you'll be running to the nearest laptop and signing up, or maybe going to the party. So you may have actually already used SQL Server in a Windows Azure virtual machine, and I'm probably just going to start saying SQL in a VM because it's a bit of a mouthful. Did anyone see the recommendation engine when they were building their schedule for TechEd? I think it only came online on Sunday, but these are my recommendations. It didn't do a bad job. So, but it's actually using SQL Server behind the scenes in a virtual machine, and we'll look at that, kind of how it actually works, a bit later in the session. The agenda is going to be vaguely like this. It's going to sort of follow in that order. But mostly it's going to consist of some demos, lots of demos, and also pay attention, because there's going to be a quiz. There really is going to be a quiz. We're offering a book, SQL Server MVP Deep Dives. It's the latest version. I really love this book. I find the way it just dips into a whole load of different topics, it's really nice to just be able to jump in. And even the royalties that they give to charity. So we'll be giving this book at one point after asking a question. So let's see. The way I want to start is with a bit of positioning. Is it confusing that in the Windows Azure public cloud, there's SQL Azure and there's SQL Server now? You can run both. That's one of those rhetorical questions that don't have an answer. But the answer is no, it's not. So let's see why. I know that didn't make any sense. So one way you can picture it, and I'm sorry I'm sort of looking over at this screen, but one way you can picture it is you can contrast the amount of control that you'd like over your infrastructure and your operating systems, your middleware, and then contrast that against the level of expenditure, like capital expenditure, operating expenditure. So down with the highest level of control and the highest potential cost is just if you install SQL Server on a physical machine. And then you may have multiple physical machines, multiple SQL Server instances, so there's a lot of management to do. You pay for everything up front. You control the entire stack right down to the networking and the hardware. You can potentially save some money by consolidating and deploying a private cloud. An example is, say, the SQL Server database appliance. There, you're delivering a level of infrastructure as a service to your on-premise users. So you still have the capital expenditure of the hardware. Some of the manageability is taken care of for you, but you've still got basically full control over the whole stack. Then if you move into the public cloud, did I cover my mic? If you move into the public cloud, you can get rid of the capital expenditure altogether, and you can get cost savings by just paying for what you use. So with SQL Server running in a Windows Azure virtual machine, you still get the 100% compatibility. So every feature that you used to on-premise, you can use in the cloud. And I think that's a key value prop for a lot of people at the moment. The other good thing is the infrastructure is taken care of for you. So you just control the operating system and the application itself, but everything else is managed for you. So that takes away some of the manageability burden. And then you can take that further, and there's SQL Azure, now called Windows Azure SQL Database. So there, the infrastructure right up to the OS and middleware is taken care of for you. That frees you to really focus on the business logic. So it's great for fast application development. Also, it's very cost-effective. If you just create a small database, I think it starts at like $10 a month, and that's not bad for an entirely managed database service. So the topic we're going to concentrate on is SQL in a VM. And I think some of the scenarios that are going to be popular with this is migration. Because of that 100% compatibility, you can take your existing applications that are on-premise and just forklift them or move them into the cloud. It also has a lot of potential for development and test as well. So you could just rapidly set up a development environment, say you need it for a few hours, you need to run tests for a few hours, and then shut it down and just pay for that. So it's quite compelling from that perspective as well. Let's look at this service then a little bit deeper, the virtual machine. Now, I'm going to make the assumption that you're here because you've heard about the virtual machine. Maybe you've been to some of the Windows Azure talks. So we're not going to spend too long on this. But it's an evolution of what was previously announced, which was the VM role. Did anyone hear about the VM role? Okay, a few people. So the VM role, you could run a virtual machine, but the OS disk wasn't persistent. So you could install SQL Server, and it would kind of work, but it wasn't an ideal environment because you'd have to change your application to work with a non-persistent disk. So now you have a fully persistent disk. You have a very nice management portal. You have an image library, so you can deploy fully pre-installed images and deploy them directly. And it comes with a load of nice features. All but one of those are directly relevant to SQL Server Engine. I'm not sure if anyone can guess which one isn't directly relevant. But actually, even Linux, it's got a nice client library for SQL Server. So it's a really nice set of features to run SQL Server in. How about the size of the virtual machines that you can use, and how does that relate to SQL Server? Oh, yeah. There was one point I really wanted to highlight, actually, which is the cloud-first VM creation experience. We'll look at that a little more. The point there is that you can just deploy an image that's been created for you by Microsoft, which has SQL Server pre-installed on Windows Server 2008 R2. That way, if you want to develop an application, or even if you want to migrate an application, rather than uploading a disk, it may actually be quicker to just deploy that and then configure it, or then move your data to it. So that cloud-first VM creation experience is a really nice feature. Okay, so let's look at the different virtual machine sizes that you get and how that relates to SQL Server. If you look at the extra small, and here's some of the specifications that go with them as well. If you look at the extra small, only SQL Server Express Edition is supported. Anyone want to tell me why? Did you say memory? Very good. In fact, I think you get a free flash drive, which has a copy of today's session on. I should probably ask people to come up, but I'll throw it your way. And the capacity of this drive is 1 gigabyte, which would have probably been impressive 10 years ago. Yes, it's memory. So most editions of SQL Server require 1 GB as a minimum memory, but SQL Express, I'm not sure what the minimum is, but it's less than 1 GB, so that's the supported for extra small. For production workloads, we recommend medium. If you look at the memory, that's really the main reason that we recommend medium or higher for production workloads. But small and higher are supported. So particularly if you're testing or if you have a production instance but you know it's not performance critical, you could use small as well. Okay, how do you actually run SQL Server in a VM then? Two main ways, which I already alluded to. You can bring your own image. So you can create a VHD on-premise, or you may already have a VHD on-premise, and you can upload it to your Windows Azure storage account. Once you've done that, once it's in the blob store, you can then instantiate it and boot from it, and it's fully persistent. If you do that, we support SQL Server versions 2008 and up, and you can use license mobility to have a SQL Server license for that. The other option I mentioned, the cloud-first VM creation experience, use the gallery image. Right now, during the preview, It's an evaluation edition of SQL Server 2012. And it's running on Windows 2008 Service Pack 1. Oh, a question? Sorry. Okay, so two questions. The first question is, what's license mobility? That is, I'm not sure if there's any licensing experts here, but it's basically a way that you can take your license and run it in the cloud, at least in this context. So that's the simple version, but I suggest you do a search for it. And I did that a couple of days ago, and there's a page that goes through and explains it. So the other question is, are we planning bigger instances, more than 14 GB of memory? Was that the question? And yes. I don't know. I can't really say when or really give anything concrete about that. That's Windows Azure are going to be looking at that. But if I just look at the competition, then I would think people are thinking about it. At least I can say that much. So for the GA, a little bit more about the default instance. So it comes with all the components. Basically, it's got the default options on it, and it comes with all the components. So integration services, reporting services, analysis services are there. For the GA release, which is going to be sometime this year, then there's going to be more additions planned. There'll also be the option of pay-as-you-go licenses. Right now, you don't need that. It's an evaluation edition. But there'll be pay-as-you-go, although you could still use license mobility. Once you've actually deployed an image, then you're responsible for patching it and maintaining it. But the images in the gallery, we expect to refresh them with the latest patches every month. So that's like the latest Windows patches. Or if there was a critical patch, then it may get refreshed more quickly. Yes, sir? Can you use TDE? Yes, you can. That's the benefit of having that 100% compatibility. Sure. And very recommended, too. It's very recommended that you follow security best practices, particularly in the connection to your machine. So I think that pretty much covers it. There's just a link at the bottom to a support statement. So we signed off on testing, so we officially support SQL Server running in a VM, and there's a support statement there. So if you download this session later, you can go to it. But it's basically the regular virtualization support statement for SQL Server. We just modify it. We've just updated it. So that's the basics. Let's have a demo now and show us the basics of getting started.
Thank you very much, guys.
Oh, I need to press. Excuse my amateurish transition.
Can you hear me? Something's wrong with my mic. Can you hear me now?
Well.
So I will try to speak loudly then. I hope you will be able to hear me. And what I'm going to show you is how you can create your VM with a SQL Server in Windows Azure. And I'm going to show you how you can create your SQL Server VM in a Windows Azure. And that's a kind of basic experience, so we can rely on that experience in the demos that we are going to show later. So first thing you see when you come up to your Windows Azure portal is that screen. So probably if you come up for the first time, there won't be any VMs and any deployment, so it will be just empty list. In my case, there is something in a list, but the whole experience will be absolutely the same. Go and press plus new button, and here you choose a virtual machine and gallery option, because that's the easiest way to create your VM.
Just let me stop for a second. Just a mic. Okay.
sorry for that technical thing. When you will come up to the gallery, there may be more images than just the images that are provided by some suppliers. So you may want to limit number of images by clicking platform images. In that case, list will be shorter and it will be easier to choose the right image. Probably resolution is slightly too low. And there is a wizard buttons where you can move forward. That's the first page of that wizard, and on that page you're going to choose some basic configuration parameters for that VM. Let's type it. One parameter is important on that page, and that's the parameter that Guy did talk about before, and that's the size of the VM. As Guy did tell you already, we recommend using medium and larger for production VM, but for non-production VM, it's up to you what you're going to use. The next page presents you two interesting options. The first one, name it standalone virtual machine. That means that your machine will be in own separated network, and it will have a Windows Azure firewall in front of that machine. That means that each time you go to that machine, you need to configure how you go through Windows Azure firewall. But on the other side, that machine will have its own separate DNS name. So there's pros and cons. Another option is when you decide to interconnect few virtual machines. In that case, virtual machines will not have Windows Azure firewall between them, but they will not also have separate DNS names per each machine. So if you're connecting externally to them, you will be sharing single DNS name and IP address. So you need to play with ports on the Windows Azure firewall in order to get to specific VM. In that case, I'm just going to choose that option because I did choose it before. And the last thing I would like to mention here, actually let me switch back to the standalone machine, is the region. And the region is a very important option because that it defines where your machine will be located. And you probably would like to locate it as close to your customers as possible. And the last page presents you another interesting option. That option named availability set. And that's a way to group few virtual machines and tell Windows Azure, please don't turn all those machines off at once. So Windows Azure, when it will be doing some maintenance tasks, load balancing events, upgrades, and in other cases, it will try to keep as minimum some of machines in availability set running. We don't need that option now, so I'm just going to complete that dialogue. And when you complete it, there will be a message on a Windows Azure portal. There is a details link. It will not show much details right now, but there can be also error message. It will look similar, but there will be some red icons on top of that. And in that case, details link may be very, very useful because you will see a lot of additional details from that. And now it's a time for the quiz.
Oh, quiz time.
So you have just created your virtual machine, and you see it on your screen. And you need to create the new SQL database. What button will you press? Who did tell that first? Actually, both options are true.
This is very good. So who said connect or attach first?
Yeah.
So come up at the end for your SQL Server MVP.
I'm not going to throw it.
Sorry?
8 gigabytes
of RAM. You want 8 gigs now.
So let me show a few other options you can do in a VM after that.
Okay.
Could you switch back to my machine?
Okay.
So when you have your virtual machine created, it will take some time until it's finally provisioned. Windows Azure do some work under hood, so it takes about 8 to 10 minutes to provision that VM. But I have created another VM just an hour ago, so I can show you how it actually looks like. Okay. Yeah. No, it's not supposed to be dark. Let me choose any. Probably we have lost our network connection. I'm going to show that little later, so let's switch to the presentation then.
Okay. Just let me know then.
Yep.
So the reason we ask this is that it is possible to confuse SQL Azure with SQL Server running on a VM. So what some people might do is click on SQL databases, for example, if they want to create a database. So you guys are all way too smart, though. You got the right answers. You either connect to go create your database, or you may want to attach storage first. And are you talking about attaching storage? I think you are writing one of your demos.
Yeah, I will be talking about that later.
Okay. All right, so you've started your you've created the database. Or you want to connect to your database instance? How do you do that? You've deployed a gallery image. How do you actually connect to it? If you click that connect button, then a sequence basically like this on the screen takes place. You get to a virtual machine desktop, and then you can, for example, run SSMS and connect using Windows authentication. If you wanted to connect from your own remote desktop session, you'd have to look at what the randomly assigned public port is, because automatically for you, a Windows Azure endpoint gets created. So internally, it's using the default port of 3889, but then externally, it's going to assign a random port. So you can just click connect, but then if you set up your own remote desktop, you'd have to check what that port is and then connect to it. What about running SQL Server Management Studio from on-premises and connecting to your database engine? What are the steps involved in that? As you can see, there's a rather blank bit on this slide. So let's work through what those steps are. So for one thing, the SQL Server instance is by default, it's Windows authentication, which is security best practices. Now, if you didn't want to change that and set up, for example, end-to-end encryption and create all the ports yourself, if you just want to connect to the default instance, what you might want to do is change that to mixed mode authentication so that you can just create a login and then connect to it with your login. If you wanted to connect to it with your regular ID, then you might have to use Windows as your virtual network and then do a domain join and connect. But if we're not going to do that, then we'll need to create a login or enable an existing login like SA and then go through with mixed mode authentication. Of course, it's still not going to work because you need to go to your firewall in the VM and open the port that SQL Server is listening on. So it's listening on an endpoint. By default, it's 1433, so we have to go into the firewall and open that port. Is it going to work now? Well, there's still a little gap there, so probably not. You still need to open Windows as your endpoint. So that's effectively the security that your VM has. It's completely closed down until you manually open an endpoint. And when you go and create an endpoint in the portal, you specify what the public port is, and then you can specify what the private port is. So, for example, you could make the private port 1433 and specify a different port, which you then use to connect to SQL Server Management Studio. Like I said, this isn't necessarily following security best practices. What you might want to do is configure all of these according to the best practices and use encryption all the way through. But this would be the basics of connecting just from your laptop once you create it. Once you get it down, it's pretty straightforward. What about if you've uploaded your own image? How do you connect to that? If you don't enable a remote desktop connection to it, then you probably don't connect to it. You probably create your image again and upload it again. That's the voice of bitter experience. It's worth remembering to create that remote, enable a remote desktop connection. There's a couple of other gotchas as well. There's a maximum operating system disk size of 127 gigabytes, and it's recommended that you use a static VHD when you create one. And of course, it's up to you how you want to configure your virtual machine firewall and your Windows as your endpoint to whatever connection mechanism you plan to use. So that's if you upload your own image. Now, Evgeny has already given you a dire warning to check the region where you're deploying a VM when you go and create a VM. This is really just a reminder. Again, it's very easy to get the wrong region by accident when you're creating a VM, and that can increase network latency. So it's always worth checking that box when you're creating a VM. So are you ready to go to the next demo?
Yes, I'm ready.
So the next section of this session really talks about different scenarios. Like, what's the typical use case that you might use this for? And then Evgeny has a couple of examples, although I guess you're going to finish with the previous section of,
yes,
of connecting first. Okay, so let me switch to
three. So as a follow-up to the first demo, I'm going to show you how your VM will look like when you log into it for the first time. And this is an important point, because SQL Server provisioning is not complete when your VM says that provisioning is complete. And there is about a minute and a half or 2 minutes that SQL Server provisioning process needs to complete after you log in into your VM for the first time. There will be some UI, which may not be visible because there will be other windows that Windows Server shows you. But there is one indicator which shows you that provisioning process is complete for SQL Server. If you see that icon on your desktop, it's a getting started icon, then you can be sure that it's done.
And that's got a lot of useful information in it, too.
Yeah, and I recommend you to click that link and read information which document it points to contains. And now I'm going to show you how you can actually migrate your database from the on-premise to the VM. And there is an interesting thing we're going to do. We are going to create some container which you will use to transfer your data into Windows Azure. And that container will be VHD file. There are multiple ways how you can create that container. For example, if you're running Hyper-V already, you can do that from Hyper-V Manager. I prefer, in that case, creating it from the inside the VM, because that case is applicable to both the VM case and the physical machine case. I have created that VHD file already, so you can see it's already attached as a drive. And I'm going to create a backup of the database, which will be placed on that drive. Okay, we have a backup. Now you need to come back to disk management. And in disk management, you need to detach that VHD. Otherwise, tools you will be using later won't be able to access it. The next thing you need to do is to get Windows Azure SDK. At that point, you don't need the whole SDK. You just need the single tool from that SDK, which is called CS Upload. And you also don't need to remember links where you can find that SDK, because there's a simple way how you can find it. You can click on any of cloud services you have, and you will have as minimum one when you will deploy your first virtual machine. Windows Azure will create your first cloud service for you. You go inside that cloud service, and there is a nice blue icon, which is a cloud icon. And you can go to that icon, and there will be a link pointing you to the place where you can download Windows Azure SDK.
I guess you can you use the Cloud Explorer tool as well?
Yes, you can use another third-party tools. I'm just going to show how this can be done with the tools we are providing. Now you come back to that VM. And what we need, we need to use a command line tool, which is called CSUpload. Let me just get a command line for it. It is pretty long, looks scary, but actually it isn't. There are just a few parameters in that command line, and there are a few important parameters. The first thing, let me actually try to zoom in. There is a first important parameter is what exactly you're going to add. And you can add just a drive, or you can add persistent VM image, which you can use later to instantiate your VM. Those things are similar, but result provided slightly different in the Windows Azure. The next thing it defines is a connection. And here you need to have your certificate, which you can upload on a Windows Azure, which you should upload on a Windows Azure. Also, you need to have the same certificate on your machine. And to upload that certificate to the Windows Azure, the easiest way to do so is to click on a preview link and click on a link which will take you to the previous portal. Unfortunately, there are some features which exist on a previous portal but didn't find their way to the new portal yet, so those are on the way. On the old portal, you need to click on a hosted services and then on a management certificate. And here you can just add your certificate and you don't need that old portal anymore. It's minimal for moving the data. And now try to run that utility. It may take some time. Sorry. Just a little wrong. I'm probably not going to correct that command line right now. I'm going to show what happens next. And the next, in your Windows Azure portal, you are starting to see that freshly uploaded VHD drive as a drive which you can attach to your virtual machine. And that's the place where attach button became very important. You choose attach disk, and here you can choose the drive which you have just uploaded. It takes about a minute to for freshly uploaded VHD to show up in that list, so please don't be surprised. Then when you have it uploaded, you simply go to the VM. It is already attached. But you need to go into disk management and check if it's attached as online or offline. If it's attached as offline, you need to bring it online, so then it will have its own drive letter associated with it. And then you can go to your management studio and restore that database from the backup you have just created on that container. So now database is moved, but there are a few other steps that you need to do. And you also need to go back to the portal for that. You need to go to your virtual machine. And in that virtual machine, you need to configure the endpoint. That's what guys have been talking about. And there's another interesting thing I'm going to show you about that endpoint. If you see, public port is different from the private port. And that's because that VM is connected to another VM. So I can create only one public port 1433. all other public ports where you need to have a connection to SQL Server needs to be different, because there can be only one port with specific number on a single IP address. And then when you have done that, you can try to connect to your virtual machine. Probably I have typed something wrong, but I will use that as an opportunity to show you where you can find the right thing. It's on dashboard for your virtual machine called Cloud App, sorry.
I'm quite impressed that you were typing that from memory, actually.
Yeah. We are connected, and we can see our database on that CloudDB instance VM. So another thing you can do with your VM is to use DAC2, which allows you to export-import. And that's much more pleasant experience than moving it through a VHD file. But there are few limitations for traditional methods and for the DAC2. To do this with the DAC tool, I have created another database, which we don't have on that VM yet. And I'm going to run the DAC tool, so you will see how to do so. It lives in your Microsoft SQL Server folder in, in your program files. And let's name it import and export data. It's a wizard-based tool, pretty simple to use. And all that it needs to have is a two SQL connections, one for the source server and another one for the destination. Source server is a local one, and we're going to choose a database, which is different from one we have just migrated. And another one will be the VM, which we have just migrated another database to. I'm refreshing connection and looking at the list of the databases. The database we are going to move is not exist on that server yet. So we need to create it first. On this same page where you're creating the database, you can set various parameters which you usually specify when you create a database. So it's a can be very useful, especially if you're moving applications which have specific requirements. Now the database appears in the list. And on the next page, you can choose simple scenario when you copy table by table, or you can choose a scenario when you're moving using some complex scripts. That may be very useful if you have application with a special requirements. Even if you choose a simple scenario, you still can adjust some mappings between tables. So you can change table names, for example, on the fly. You can change how you you name fields in those tables, columns in those tables. We don't need to do so. And on the last page, there is another interesting thing you can do. You can save it as SSIS package, and you can rerun it later if you do this more than once. And now we are ready to go. I'm just clicking finish. It completes in a few seconds, but that's just because I don't have enough data to load it for an hour. And you see that database is migrated. Of course, in all cases, don't forget to migrate your user passwords and other things which are considered user secrets. And that's what you can do if you would like to migrate your that data to the virtual machine. And I'm going to pass that send
okay,
to Guy.
Thanks, Evgeny. I guess you could use contained databases there as well for password flag users and passwords contained in the database.
Yes,
in some cases.
It's also an option.
Yeah, okay. But I really like that scenario because there's a good example of using a gallery image and then migrating your application to it. So that's kind of nice. So we've looked at some simple examples of starting a VM, deploying it, open ports. Suppose you wanted to do that with hundreds of VMs, though. You're not really going to want to go to the portal and do that. You're going to want to script it. So let's look at an example of how you could script that to basically deploy at scale. PowerShell comes to the rescue. There's a whole load of PowerShell commandlets that you can use. So here's a hypothetical example. You'd start by importing your subscription and basically setting your active subscription. And then once you've done that, in this example batch, basically a new VM is being prepared and assigned to a variable. So once it's prepared, then you can then add that to the new Azure VM commandlet, and you can add as many of these VMs that you've prepared as you like. So then you can just create a whole lot of new VMs in one go. But what about creating that endpoint so you can access it from the ports that you want to access it? There are commandlets available to do that as well. So in this case, it's the get Azure VM, and you can basically set whatever the public ports, local ports that you want. So that's really nice. And there's a link here for where you can, actually it's the SDK download basically, and that includes PowerShell and it includes some nice examples as well. We've got a few more links at the end of where you can get tutorials and examples for that. Next, I'll talk about a couple of little real live applications. And actually, not necessarily little, one of them's fairly large actually, but how is this actually being used right now? It's early days because we're still in the preview, but I've been hearing this week of quite a few actual live applications that have started using it. So we'll start with the one that I introduced at the beginning, which is the recommendation engine. I like this diagram because I can understand it, and it's fairly straightforward. You've got, where it says Windows Azure, you've got a virtual machine running there. You've got SQL Server 2012, integration services, and analysis services. So when you're building your content in TechEd website, that information is going to the analysis services, and it's also integrating content from the technical content depository. And then it's using a web API and providing a recommendation. So it's pretty straightforward, and it's a nice use of the virtual machine because it's got the integration services and analysis services support. It could be shut down at the end of the conference, so it's really no great deployment effort. It was just spun up, shut down. It could be modified again for another conference and used again. So I had a link to a more detailed description of that on the second slide if anyone downloads this deck and wants to take a look, a little bit of a more in-depth write-up of that scenario. The second scenario I'll talk about is actually used internally in Microsoft. So it's an MSIT Azure SharePoint deployment. So they have a particular database, a particular application that they use, and it's a fairly complex interacting components. So it's using SQL, it's using analysis services, it's using SharePoint. They wanted to move it to Windows Azure, and they basically used a forklift approach. So they didn't build it in the cloud because that really wasn't ready yet. This was really early days. So the way they did that, they created a load of VMs, and then they did a domain join and extended their network from on-premise into the cloud. So then in Microsoft, as just consumers of that service, we don't even know that it's in the cloud because it's been domain joined. We just use it like it's part of the network. So that they found that worked very well. I'll move to a slide that basically goes through the steps that they went through in terms of planning this. But basically, all their planned scenarios worked as expected. They're getting pretty reasonable performance as well. At the time they ran this, the only data center was in Dublin. So there was a bigger network latency, but they found it was just like using a remote data center. It worked pretty well. So it's currently in progress. They're monitoring it. They're applying hardware load balancing. They were worried that there's going to be SharePoint timeouts, but that didn't actually happen. So the basic steps that they went through in planning, figured out how many VMs they needed and what size. They configured the Windows Azure virtual network, provisioned the VMs. Figured out how they configured the access for it, and then they uploaded the VHDs because they created them on premise. They just uploaded the VHDs, they installed the SharePoint farm manually in the cloud, and they were pleasantly surprised that everything worked. And then in this diagram is the different VM sizes that were used for the different components. So that was a very successful project that I honestly don't know when I'm using it and when I'm not, because it just seems like part of the corporate tools in the network. So I will move next to the next demo.
Yep.
And
now I'm going to show you how you can use the cloud, the all capabilities of the cloud, to get the most from that. What I did set up the classical setup of DB mirroring, using three machines, so two machines, primary and mirror and witness server. And because you have reliable infrastructure behind your machines, infrastructure itself would be working, but there is no guarantees for your individual machines that it will not be rebooted or moved to another node in case there's some upgrades or other things happens on the node where your machine it happens to be. So what I did group all those three machines into availability set. And I'm just going to show how that works. OK. It loses connectivity right on time when I need it. Sorry for that. Okay,
do you want to show the video, or do you want to carry on?
Let me show the video, because the demo gods are not pleasant to us today. Sorry for that. I'm going to move that video to the point where we can start seeing the VM. So what I will do, I will go and from the Windows Azure, I will reboot one of the VMs. So that may happen without any my intent. And it can be caused by any external event, and that happens sometime. I have seen that during last week a couple of times, so it may be the case. And now I'm going to switch to the mirror machine, to the database mirroring monitor, and see what will actually happen. So I think I did refresh or a couple of refreshes, and you see principle did change. Machine which was mirrored before, now it's principal. And in that case, your application has all possibilities to get the high availability. So your machine is redundant, and your application also have a redundancy in terms of database servers. It's just an example. There may be other scenarios when you can try to utilize high availability. And we are going back to the presentation.
OK, thanks, Evgeny.
Server that's hosting the SQL, or is it mirroring the SQL server in itself?
it's mirroring the database. It's that database mirroring working in a SQL server. You can have a that's an interesting point, because in case you're using database mirroring, for example, you can use different set of servers to achieve different, I would say, metrics of mirrors. It shouldn't be single principle for all mirrored databases. The same server can be witness for another database.
Another question?
Configuration is always for individual VM. All that it lists, why you may be confused, because it lists all the VM which are in single availability set.
What kind of applications do you see in the cloud? I'm wondering about like ERP applications.
It can be any kind of application. The key thing you need to keep in mind that cloud will, in the cloud you will have slightly higher latency. So most likely if your application really depends on this very short latency, then you may need to perf test it specifically for the cloud. If your application doesn't depend on its latency and it fits in the parameters that cloud provides you, I don't see any problem for any of the applications.
And ERP, I definitely heard of at least one example of ERP moving to the cloud. So I think that.
Do you know if like a database AX has been tested?
Well, we're definitely chatting to those guys. There's definitely a lot of interest. I can say that for certain. So do you mean you getting Dynamics AX and then running it in a VM? That's a really good question. I don't know if it's been officially tested in that scenario. If you want to like leave me an email at the end, I can definitely follow up on that for you. And I think in your answer to the last question, Evgeny alluded to one of the potential concerns that people are always going to have when you're running a database server in a VM in a public cloud is performance. So what can we say about performance? What's the story? Are there any tips to improve performance when you're running SQL Server on a Windows Azure VM? Obviously, understand your performance constraints. Are you memory dependent? Are you CPU bound? If you understand that, that can help you choose the right size of a VM. Benchmark on different sizes. You can use PowerShell, a commandlet, to set different sizes and do that testing. One good thing is that your regular tools are going to work. So if you use SQLIO, for example, to look at I/O characteristics, you can use them in the VM as well. There's also, so any of your traditional performance troubleshooting techniques are going to work. But there's also additional tools as well, such as Azure Storage Analytics, to get a really good view of what's happening with the storage and the I/O. We've got a few basic recommendations. Use the default Mac server memory. Just our tests have shown that's the best general value for good performance. You could put data on the C drive, on the OS drive, but it's recommended that you move it to an attached drive. And if you are going to put it on the C drive or on the OS drive, disable write caching. And you can do that with a PowerShell commandlet as well. You could consider putting tempdb on the D drive. And that's effectively a scratch drive, which is not persistent. So that's something that may be worth testing with, whether putting tempdb on a cache drive actually gives you better performance or not. If I/O is a problem, then you could consider using database page compression to minimize the I/O as much as possible. Yeah.
I heard the other presentation on D drive. Mm-hmm.
We are talking about tempdb, which is going to be recreated each time when you restart SQL Server. So it should never contain any data you would like to persist.
Right.
So it should be considered non-permanent. And because tempdb fits into that example perfectly. That's why we recommend putting it here. So you don't need to store it on your data drive. You don't need to waste your data space.
But like I say, it's definitely worth testing your performance with that scenario or not. Any guesses as to what the other main concern that people have about putting data in the public cloud? Very good. How did they know? So, how secure is it? Well, Windows Azure adheres to the Microsoft security development lifecycle. So there's security at all layers. Compliance is probably the biggest concern. And when I chat to people, people often say, what about this specific acronym? Do we support that? And that's a conversation that we have quite a lot. And currently, the Windows Azure Safe Harbor, and I'm afraid I'm reading this because I don't necessarily remember all of the acronyms, but the Windows Azure Safe Harbor ISO 27001, in progress is the SSA 16 audit, and there's also planning going on for FISMA, the EU Data Privacy Directive, PCI DSS, HIPAA, BAA. So there's a lot of work going on in security. The top three layers of the stack is basically up to you, because in a virtual machine, then you control the application, the data, the user level. And because it's 100% compatible, you can make that as secure as you like. What I want to close with, as we get towards the end, is to talk about what have been our main investment themes as the SQL Server team have been working on this, and what's our roadmap? What do we want to invest in the future? These are our basic themes, where what we really wanted to get right the first time are the fundamentals. So we wanted competitive performance. We wanted solid, high availability. We wanted very, very thorough set of testing, so our QA teams sign off on it and say, yes, it's good. So that was we were really concerned about the fundamentals, particularly for scenarios such as application migration and development. As we move towards GA and beyond, where do we want to really put that investment in? And then we start thinking more and more about the hybrid cloud. So you saw an example of a hybrid cloud with the MSIT application, which basically domain joins from on-premise. I think from the conversations that I've had, there's a lot of companies that are very interested in that hybrid scenario, where you've got resources on and off-premise. So we'll be looking into that in more detail. Manageability. We want a really good unified manageability story. And then another scenario that kind of emerges when you have a lot of VMs running in the cloud is, how's administration? Are there any auto admin capabilities that would make that easier, particularly if you're doing that at scale? If you've got any suggestions, any requests, come talk to us. We're doing a lot of planning in this area, so I'm always interested to have a conversation about that. Wouldn't it be nice if it worked like this? So do let us know. So I'm going to summarize with what are the kind of what we see as some of the real advantages of running SQL Server in this environment. So there's the low total cost of ownership, the fact that you can just shut it down when you're done, just pay for what you use, and you can choose images from a library, so you don't have the cost of uploading VMs, and you've got 100%. Application compatibility, so you don't have the cost of the application development. The fact that it's got that 100% compatibility, you've got tools such as high availability that are going to work. In the preview, always on isn't supported, but the goal is for that to be supported by GA. You can configure any kind of advanced security that you like, and all the other tools. I think we saw an example of integration services, analysis services. You can have that full BI functionality as well. You've got the flexibility, so I mentioned, emphasized a few times that cloud-first VM creation experience. That can really cut down the costs of your development, but at the same time, you've got that full control of the virtual machine. And you can even domain join and have your Active Directory integration. And then lastly, the fact that the infrastructure is managed for you, it comes with an SLA, so you've got 99.9% availability SLA. And your management tools, you can really just use existing tools, or you can even integrate with tools such as System Center to get a single pane of glass. I want to leave you with some next steps, which are just some suggestions on where to get more information, how to sign up for the preview. There's also a forum, an MSDN forum, where you can just ask questions, and we're monitoring that forum and we'll provide answers. There's some great tutorials. We use some of these tutorials in creating this presentation, just on how-to guides, how to get started. Probably if I asked you what the third question people ask would be, maybe that would have been pricing. So here's a couple of links to some pricing information. Very much value your feedback, or your feedback, according to this slide. There's a preview button on the portal when you go there, right at the top. You can click on that and provide feedback. I'm not sure why this is going off the screen. But all I added really there is there's an email address, which is sqldevx@microsoft.com. So if you prefer to send an email, you could just send an email. But we're going to leave some business cards here, so you're welcome to just email us directly if you have any questions. So that's pretty much it. Are there any questions? Or you're welcome to come up at the end and ask some additional questions?
Yep.
Well, thank you very much.
There's a question.
Thank you.
The question is that if there is some ports blocked on the corporate firewall, is there any way to proxy that? That actually depends on the protocol you are going to use. But another way how you can go around that, you control which port you're creating on as an endpoint. So the port you specify in an endpoint as a public port is a port which you need to connect. And you can use a different port if specific port is blocked.
If I wanted to skip port 80 and
443, they're already well known. You can choose any port, so there is no restrictions on that.
Please do fill out an evaluation. Let us know how we did, how we can improve. That's always very much appreciated.
And thank you very much for visiting TechEd.
Yeah, enjoy the party.